Lots of clients and organisations pay lip service to being customer-centric, and that's why in this week's podcast we're going to give you arguments to convince them that lip service is not enough. Being user-centric is more important than ever before. Welcome to BoagWorld.com, the podcast for all of those involved in designing, developing and running websites on a daily basis. My name is Paul Boag and joining me is Marcus. Hello, Marcus.
Hello, Paul. How are you? I haven't seen you. You've been away, haven't you?
Oh, I'm always away at the moment. I'm super jet lagged today. Oh, I'm getting up. Overrated. Flip me, was that difficult this morning?
Yeah, I found that when we went to Chicago last time, I struggled to get up, and I had no problem going to bed. So there wasn't a point, because often when you're jet lagged, you kind of wake up at 4 a.m, don't you? No,
yeah.
None of that. I was just knackered the whole
yeah.
time.
Well, no, I did. I woke up at 3, yeah. So and then kind of sat there for a bit, and then went back to sleep, and then didn't want to wake up this morning. So there you go. Such is life. But it was a really good conference.
I was going to say, how was it?
Yeah, I was in. It was the Blend conference in Charlotte. Mm-hmm. And I have to say, I think it was probably the best conference I have been to this year.
Oh, I thought you were going to say ever then, which would have been much more betterer.
Yeah, maybe. I certainly, I met some very cool people.
Okay.
Which was very exciting. We had such a laugh. I have not laughed that so much in a long, long time.
Well, that's really good, because I know that you were kind of like, oh, I've got to get on another plane and go to something.
Yeah.
So I'm pleased it worked out well.
Yeah, it was good. And the talks were excellent as well. I did a day's worth of the conference out of the two.
Yeah.
Because I was knackered and, you know, lazy, basically.
Well, I know you shouldn't, but I've always seen conferences as a kind of like an excuse to put your feet up a bit.
Yeah. Yeah, they kind of are in principle, but I always come back exhausted from them. You kind of have to put your feet up a bit.
Well, no, but I mean, I know that often people that work for, you know, like large institutions and who have kind of like fought to get a ticket, you know, from their boss or whatever, they feel like it's their duty to go to every single thing and, you know,
yeah.
take notes on everything. But I'm kind of like, well, I'm just lazy, really.
Yeah, I am as well. But the talks I went to see were absolutely excellent. A really good one on information architecture.
Mm-hmm.
A really good one about kind of the next generation of cool CSS stuff that's coming along.
That sounds boring. The first one sounded good.
Yeah, you would have really enjoyed it. The first one was by a girl called girl.
A little girl.
Well, she's very small and petite. a lady called Abby. Oh, all I know her is Abby the AI girl, because
the IA
she's
girl even.
IA girl, because her URL is abbytheia.com.
Okay.
So I'll put a link in the show notes to her anyway. I can't remember her second name. Sorry, Abby.
What was her... What? Give me one thing that was cool.
She
Not
made
to put
me
you on the spot or anything.
Yeah, yeah. She differentiated between information and content. And nice. and the kind of... The way that she was talking was that essentially we all have different mental models. Content or data is you know, the stuff we put on our site. Information is our understanding of it. And that because, you know, so when we're architecting information, so to speak, we're not just organizing content into neat silos. We're helping people interpret that content in a way that's understandable by them. So she gave a great example, which I really liked, which was about... tomatoes, right? when you go into a supermarket...
But she didn't say that, did she?
Sorry?
She didn't say that, though, did she?
No, she said tomatoes. But no,
I interrupted rudely.
It's a valid interruption, to be quite frank. We need to pull up these Americans on there. Oh, I've never been... I must... If people had read my talk the wrong way, and if it hadn't been for the fact that my tongue was firmly planted in my cheek, I would have sounded like so xenophobic in my talk. I was so rude to the Americans. It was brilliant fun. Anyway, that's beside the point. So, she gave the example of tomatoes, and about how when you go into a supermarket, tomatoes are found at the veg counter. Why are they not found on the fruit counter?
Mm-hmm.
Because they are actually a fruit. And that was kind of the point that she was driving at, is that you know, you may know something as being accurate or right, but that doesn't mean it's right for the user, if that makes sense.
Okay, yeah, cool. I mean, that kind of sounds like good labelling to me.
Yeah, well, yes, it was. She didn't say anything that, you know, set your mind on, you know, ablaze, but it was just very well argued and logical that she was... She was arguing really about the psychology behind information architecture rather than, you know, the kind of librarian side of it. So it's just making it clear that it's not just about organizing things logically. It's about fitting with users' mental models.
Yes. Cool. I agree with that.
Yes. So I think you ought to read her book because it's small and short and has big letters in it. So you'll like that.
Big letters is good.
I know. Definitely. I know how important this is.
Although
I have
a new pair of glasses, I went and had my eyes tested, and I have some new reading glasses because they have weakened. But the problem is, they're fantastic for like using on an iPad. But if I'm a yard away from my monitor, I can't see it. I have to use the old glasses for that. So I'm now at two glasses, Marcus.
Well, there you go. I weep for you.
Yeah,
what you need is a big cinema display.
Yeah, I thought you were going to buy me one.
Well, I couldn't, could I? Because the Apple store was down at the time.
Yes.
What? What was I supposed to do? You're not expecting me to remember and do it later.
Yeah, you said you'd do it when you got back from Charlotte.
I've only literally just got back. What do you want from me?
Okay. So, well, just tell me when the delivery date is.
You really want me to do this, don't you?
No, I'm fine with what I've got.
So, what was I going to say? Oh, yeah, and I had a really good chat with Mark Bolton.
Mm-hmm. Millionaire Mark Bolton.
Millionaire Mark This is how he likes to be referred to yes. now. So, in case you don't know, Mark Bolton is a web designer in the UK. And he ran an agency called Mark Bolton Design. And there were a few of them there. I can't remember exactly how many. And they've always done some brilliant work and very, very well-respected agency. But he sold up to
Monotype.
Monotype, that's the guys, yes. I knew it was a font thing. And, there was this big thing about, you know, how much money he got from doing it and stuff like that. So we liked to tease him about it. But it was actually really interesting to talk to him about the whole process of what's involved in selling your company. And it's horribly painful. And why anyone would want to do it is beyond me. But there you go. Now, it was an interesting process from him and he learned a lot from it. But he's, you know, he's very happy sitting on his big piles of cash. So we had a big laugh with him. Well, when I say with him, I mean more at his expense. So yeah, it was a really good conference. Learned a lot. It was the first time in ages that I felt like when you first go to conferences, do you know what I mean? When you come away with your mind buzzing with loads of cool things and you've met loads of cool people. And yeah, it was a real good conference experience. And it kind of made me want to run around recommending to everybody they attend a conference. If they've never done a conference before, you should, you know, go do it. You know, it's such a cool experience where maybe I'd become a bit jaded before by going to too many of them.
Yeah, I love them usually. I have had certainly, as I've mentioned many, many times on this show, certain people like Jim Koodle and Brendan Dawes talk at South by Southwest way back in 2007 or 8 or something like that. It was highly inspirational. And I've seen other things that, you know, I've waxed lyrical about. But I've only been to one conference this year, and I didn't rate it at all.
No.
Which is a shame.
It all depends. It depends on which ones you go to. Mm. It does make a difference. Catherine, does it mean nothing? So my wife, right, I bought myself a new busy and... I've got a busy and free sign on my door now.
I think right? That's hilarious, though. You should have a red light, Paul, like a recording studio.
Yeah, I know. But I've left, I forgot to move the sign to say busy. So she's just walked in. I was all ready to tell her off for ignoring the sign. And in actual fact, the sign says free. I'm sorry, Catherine.
That's okay.
She's now patronising me. There we go. Honestly. I know, how cool is that? I've got a little silver sign, and it's one of those slide back and forth things.
Yeah, no? I'm not impressed.
No. Should we talk about what we're going to do on the show?
Yes, because you lied, didn't you, Paul?
Well... It wasn't so much a lie as a sign of old age.
Really?
Well, because I said last week we're going to do the top 10 bits of software, having totally forgotten that we had an entire season 4, link in the show notes, based on exactly this. So we kind of done it.
Yeah.
So it seemed very little point in doing it again.
Although, when did we do season 4? That was like 100 years ago, wasn't it?
Well, we're on season 10 now.
Yeah.
So you do, what do we do? 3 seasons a year. So what's that? That's 3 years. Flipping heck. That's 3 years ago.
Yeah, exactly. So
there, no, it's there not. Might be some That's new 2 things. Years ago.
Yes, 2 years, Paul. 3 + 3 = 6 minus
Look,
10.
Look, I've got
4.
Jet lag. What was your excuse?
I was just agreeing with you, Paul.
To you make, just to weren't make paying you feel attention.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. We would have just been repeating ourselves, and we never do that on this show.
So instead, I'm just going to ignore that very obvious whatever it was. So instead, we're going to do the 10 reasons you should be more obsessed with your users than ever before.
Okay.
That's going to be our topic today. So are we ready to kick off, or is there any other name banter that you want to make everybody endure?
I can't think of anything.
That's good. We have been talking for 11 minutes.
Yeah, and I've been sort of, I've had, nothing's really happened.
Aww.
But that's not a bad thing. Oh, well, but that's not
to
true.
Be honest.
I do have a story.
Oh, God.
I went on Monday to Belfast.
Did you have a good day?
Last minute. Belfast was lovely. The people I met were lovely. The presentation itself was fine, absolutely fine. But, on Sunday, about 5 o'clock, popped down the pub for a couple of pints. Nothing, you know, nothing major. Came back, had some food. Thought, I've got to be up before 6.
Is this still in Belfast or back home?
No, I'm home. Sunday,
oh, right.
Sunday night. Okay,
yeah.
I'm catching an early flight, or not that early. 9 o'clock flight out of Southampton. Anyway, I've got to get down there. You know, give yourself time to check in. Blah blah blah, all that kind of thing. So early night, 9:30, went to bed, feeling tired. Nodded off to sleep. Woke up at 10:30 thinking, oh dear, my stomach's turning upside down, and basically, I won't go into any details, but
stop. you didn't need to tell this story.
I did.
Why on earth would anyone be interested in hearing about...
sympathy. I then got back to bed about 1 o'clock, knackered, feeling awful, got up the next morning, still not right, but I've got to go to Belfast on an aeroplane. Which I did, and then my plane was delayed on the way home. Feeling bad. So sympathy. I'm just after a sympathy vote. That's it.
Okay, so let's kick off then with today's
Paul,
podcast.
Give me sympathy.
No,
Come
I'm not
on.
Giving you sympathy.
Come on.
I
did that for the team.
Oh yeah, and I've been sitting around on my arse recently. I haven't been going to conference after conference.
You've been yes, you've been going to conferences.
And not just conferences. I've got to go to blimmin' Hull next week.
Blimmin' Hull.
Where is Hull? It's really funny. I find it fascinating. Every time I type Hull in on my iPhone, it auto-corrects it to Hell. I think that sums it all up.
Hull is halfway up the eastern coast of Britain.
It's nearly 6 hours away for me.
Yeah.
That's how far.
I highly, highly recommend you take a first-class train.
No, I've got to drive it.
Okay.
Because I'm then going straight across to Sheffield.
I thought you were
going
to say to Chicago.
No, not Sheffield. I didn't even mean Sheffield. Oh, for crying out loud, can we just start this
Shrewsbury
podcast already?
Is what you're trying to say, isn't it?
Yes, yes, thank you. Place.
Anyway, yeah, I don't care. Well, I don't care about you, Paul. I was having a, you know, I was telling my little story.
Nobody cares. Nobody cares about either of us.
No, they don't.
Nobody even listens to the show anymore.
If we lost the one listener.
Yeah. All right, let's kick off then. All right, so we're looking at the top 10 reasons you should be more obsessed about your users than ever before. So what I wanted to do with this podcast is I know a lot of people either have clients or bosses that go, oh, yes, we're customer-centric, you know, because that's the thing you say, but mm-hmm. actually just pay lip service to it. So what I wanted to do is give people the most convincing arguments I can come up with that paying lip service is not enough, and that actually we need to take all kinds of steps to become more customer-centric as an institution, whether that be to actually pay for usability testing, which, let's face it, a lot of clients are unwilling to do, or whether it means restructuring the business slightly, or whether it means spending more money on user interface design, whatever. Whatever you need to get your clients or managers to do in your situation, hopefully these arguments will help. That's the plan anyway.
Okay.
So we kick off with number one, which is that the competition is more accessible than ever before. That a lot of companies, I think, survived for a very long time on there being limited competition, either geographically or in people's awarenesses or whatever else. And so they could get away with maybe not providing the best customer service in the world because you didn't have a lot of choice, all right? While we now live in a world, obviously, where not only is the competition a click away, as we like to say, you know, because of Google, etc., but also, I think if you have a little bit of a moan about competition, say on Twitter or Facebook, it's inevitable that one of your wide circle of contacts that we all seem to have these days on social networks will turn around and say, oh, have you tried so-and-so? I used them and they were really good. Mm. So you kind of don't need to put the effort in you used to. Do you remember, you know, back in the day where you know, you would have to do things like buy the Witch magazine, wouldn't you, to find out what the best washing machine was or whatever. Well, now you can just do a Google and, you know, you will get the results back and you'll get all these different reviews and all of those kinds of stuff. So when it's so easy for someone to kind of switch to your competitors, it's really important you look after them and you you kind of put them first and provide an outstanding customer service. Fair comment?
Absolutely. I mean, there are very few monopolies around. It reminds me of the wonderful South Park episode when they're trying to ring up to change their satellite provider.
Right. I didn't see that one.
I'll just check it out. Because basically, there aren't really many competitors in that arena, and so therefore they do kind of charge what they like.
Yeah, do what they want.
They do what they like, and that's kind of true even in the UK. Even though there aren't. If I want satellite TV, I've got one choice.
Yeah.
Where I live, you might have two in a city, but that's it. So they do basically charge what they like. So. That's an illustration of how it used to be, I guess. But yeah, in the main, yeah.
Okay.
Although there is one thing, though.
What's that?
I think a lot of if I want to buy something, I generally just go to Amazon and just see how much it is on Amazon. If it seems reasonable, I'll buy it.
Yeah, I must admit, I do as well. So they've almost got a monopoly.
So they have a monopoly. But it's not that you can't buy these things elsewhere. It's just they kind of... I guess they've done it through good customer service.
Yeah, absolutely.
So yes, you're right, Paul.
Well, of course. Let's I'm right. On. I'm always right, Marcus. But I do like you trying to argue against me and then going around in a full circle and end up agreeing with me. That's cool. I like that. You can do that again.
Okay.
Should we do number two? So this is kind of I think probably almost the biggest in the list, and I'm going to change my mind as I go down. I'm going to say everyone's really important, aren't I? Because that's what I always do.
Like you usually do, yeah.
But I like this one, which is consumers have a greater voice to complain. So, you know, you remember we were moaning about our BA flight where I tweeted about how unhappy I was with what happened?
Yes.
Well, I went on and wrote a blog post on that. So I'll put a link in the show notes to that, about kind of that experience and what that teaches us about customer service. But as part of that, I did a little bit of research. I know, shocking, me actually doing research, but I did. And I found a really interesting story that I think kind of sums up beautifully where things are going, which is a story of a guy who... his father had flown with British Airways and had lost his luggage. British Airways had lost their luggage.
Mm-hmm.
And British Airways handled it really badly. They handled the customer experience really badly. So what this guy did is he took out a Twitter ad, right? Because they're not that expensive.
Yeah.
So that basically any time somebody mentioned British Airways, they would get this ad that says, "Don't fly with British Airways, their customer service sucks."
They lose your luggage.
Yeah, and of course this quickly got picked up by Mashable and, you know, and The Verge and all of these other kind of tech things. And then it got in turn picked up by mainstream media. And I think that's a great example about how we now have a much bigger voice to complain about. You know, I mean, the days were, if you were really unhappy with something, you know, you'd maybe moan to a few friends down the pub about how unhappy you were with your experience. Well, now you put it up on social media, you know, and you might have been talking to a handful of people in the pub, but when you post it on Facebook, I don't know how many people you follow, Marcus, on Facebook or are friends with, but it's probably considerably more than a handful.
Yes.
So the result is that suddenly every little complaint that we have is kind of increased exponentially by this kind of network of people that we've got. And if it's a complaint that resonates with people, then it gets retweeted and reshared and goes even further. So the other classic example of that is Dell Hell, where one guy blogs on his bad customer service with Dell, but because a lot of other people were feeling the same way, that then got kind of emphasized and again hit the mainstream media, and it arguably actually affected Dell's stock price. So this kind of new voice that consumers have got to got means that we need to be providing ever better customer service and be ever more user-centric in our approach. So I think that's a really compelling one. Okay, number three, which is customers have a higher expectation than ever before. So even you, Marcus.
What do you mean?
Well, I don't know. I was implying something there. I'm not quite sure what. So, this is the thing, right? So,
I certainly have a higher expectation of that my complaining will get me somewhere.
Ah, that's interesting. What?
I expect to get a positive result these days if I complain.
Ah.
I don't expect to be pushed back and go, well, tough kind of thing at all.
Yeah.
I expect to be treated well. So, therefore, if I'm not, then it's like, well, you're dumped then, whoever you are.
So, why do you think that is?
Because I guess of successes. I mean, the British Airways example is a brilliant one.
Yeah.
Fantastic example of virtually instant feedback and, you know, terribly sorry, here's a lovely thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess it's seen those good customer experiences, isn't it?
Yeah.
It works on two levels. It works on that I've complained level. And I've become used to getting a good response from that, which is what you're talking about. What I was thinking about is that we have higher expectations of customer service in the first place. So, for example, going back to the Amazon example, you know, I've come to kind of expect next day delivery because I've got Prime. I know I pay for Prime, but that's kind of set a level of expectation from me in terms of Amazon. And also, I expect Amazon's ease of returning stuff as well, because, you know, they make it easy, so I kind of expect everybody else to do the same. And, you know, and so it goes on, doesn't it? You know, all the time companies are outperforming one another. I don't like queuing in a store anymore, because I've got so used to Apple stores where there's always someone knocking around, you know, that I can just grab and ask a question of or whatever. So that's kind of increased my expectations as well. But there's also an element in this of software as well. The example I always use with higher education institutions we work with is that students don't understand why they essentially get really high quality software from people like Google for free when they pay their university £9,000 in the UK of fees every year, and they get vastly inferior products. You know, so there's kind of expectations in terms of products as well. So there you go.
True. Sorry, I'm looking for jokes.
I knew you were, because you'd gone suspiciously quiet. Which is always a sign that
I'm
gone.
Busy. Very busy.
I'm sorry I disturbed you with this podcast. So, I mean, an example of frustration that I had recently, and it very, very nearly changed my behaviour, but in the end, money won over with me, was... I went to order my iPhone 6 Plus, which I've done, by the way, Marcus.
See, how can you order one without knowing what it feels and looks like?
Because I buy whatever Apple tell me.
Yeah, but you had a choice.
No, I
you had to get the most expensive
one.
No,
I didn't have to get the most expensive one. No, because I only got the 64 gigabyte rather than the 128 gigabyte.
Yeah, but you'll regret that, won't you? You're already regretting it.
I am already regretting it. But the number just seems so high on the most expensive one, I couldn't bring myself to do it. I just had Chris sitting on my shoulder going, oh, no, mustn't do that. Yeah, not that he sounds like that. No, do you want the truth, Marcus, as to why I know that I can buy the 6 Plus rather than the 6? Do you want to know?
I want to know. I've got a funny feeling that I might
go on.
You've made one, haven't you?
Yes.
Yes. Out of cardboard.
Yes. I made one and kept it in my pocket for a little bit. See what it felt like.
What does it feel like now to admit that?
Shameful. I'm really sorry. I'm a bad human being. I feel like... oh, dear. I can't go on now. That's it. Anyway, no, so the point was there, I had to ring EE in order to order it, because their website confuses the crap out of me. I thought, it really feels like you're opening a new account, right? So I'd end up with two mobile accounts, is what it feels like. Apparently it's not that, but they've got something seriously wrong with their site. So that was a bad experience to begin with.
Right.
But secondly, I was just sitting on hold forever and ever and ever and ever. And I got to the point at one stage of going, do you know what? I think I might just go and buy it unlocked from the Apple website. Because I knew I'd get a seamless and nice customer experience. Unfortunately, Chris, who was sitting on my shoulder at the time, stopped me from doing that, because that would have been a much more expensive way of buying it.
Yeah, exactly.
But it is more expensive over the long term. But anyway, that's beside the point. So yes, I didn't. But that's an example about how, you know, kind of your expectations are higher than ever before.
It's true.
So let's move on to number 4. Okay, so number 4 is, I think, quite an important one. Not as important as the last one, because I'm making that my most important. But I think there's this assumption that, oh, yeah, we kind of know users. We know what they do. You know, we know how they behave. You know, and especially, I think, clients come to us and go, well, you're the usability expert. You know, you're the user interface expert. Surely you know what users do. Why do we need to do user testing? But I think what we know as user experience designers is that essentially we don't understand users, because they are unpredictable. They do weird shit, basically. And so you do need to test and find out. Here's, yeah, and you get all kinds of ridiculous examples. You know, we've told the classic story before of doing user testing with old people and about how they didn't know how to use a mouse, so only knew how to use a trackpad. Great example of it before. There was another story that was told, which is even more extreme than that, the conference I've just come to, where somebody told a story of doing user testing with people that had never kind of really used computers before, and the guy picked up the mouse and put it on the screen. Mm. You know, and
well, it not quite such a an extreme version of that. We've just put Lee and I and Pete were putting together a Verify app test.
Oh yeah,
for testing designs, and the amount of assumptions that we make about what people will understand and the language that we use every time. I mean, Lee did this one, and I'm saying, Lee, nobody's going to know what that means, really. He's saying, but if I do, then I do the same thing. Yes, of course we understand usability, but I think we do make a lot of assumptions about what people, you know, where people's understanding of using stuff is.
Absolutely. I mean, another great one that someone told me, again, I think it was at this conference, was that somebody sent out a brief, this was a client now, that had written in the brief that he wanted the home pages to be covered with buttons, right? And unsurprisingly, he got a lot of pushback over that, and he didn't understand why. So he went to a friend who was a design usability expert and said, why am I getting a lot of pushback over this brief? And she said, because you're saying the homepage ought to be covered with buttons? And he said, well, yeah, because my current site is really static. And she said, well, yeah, but why does that lead to having... And in his mind, the opposite of static was buttons.
Okay.
Right? And that was his...
Well, that's obvious, Paul. Come
yeah,
on.
And that was his mental model. Oh, it was Abby. That's why the mental model all thing right. Made me think of it. So it was Abby that said this. And it was like, he meant dynamic. He wanted the website to be really dynamic. But in his mind, it was something different to that. It was, you know, this word buttons. Now, that's a very extreme and bizarre example of it. Mm. But I think there are all kinds of different ways, you know. Especially, yeah, anyway. So basically, users are unpredictable. And that we need to always test, therefore, to find out how they will really respond to the things that the assumptions that we make. So let's do number 5, because this is kind of related to that. So number 5 is about how user behavior has changed. So that's another thing, is that I think a lot of us may have known and understood how our users behaved at one point. We may have understood how they think, but I really believe that the way that they're behaving is changing. And I think a large reason why it's changing is because of mobile. That I think mobile and the arrival of mobile is changing the way people interact, the way that they buy, their expectations, all kinds of things. So a great example of this is that, I don't know whether you do this, Marcus, but increasingly I'm seeing people do it. If you look around, if you go into, say, I don't know, a PC World or some shop, right, a high street shop, if you look around, you will see every now and again somebody get out their mobile phone and scan the barcode of the thing on the shelf to see whether it's cheaper online.
Yep.
So that's an example about how mobile has changed people's behaviour. But it's also, obviously, it's changed people's behaviour in the fact that they've got these expectations of things being much more instant because they've always got their mobile phone on them. Obviously, navigating and using websites is different because of mobile. But also, I think people start to think, so they expect to be able to swipe elements, which they wouldn't have done before. And all kinds of little nuances in user behavior has changed because of mobile. But mobile is just one example about it. The point here is that user behavior is continually evolving over time, and that you can't kind of just sit back and say, oh, well, we created personas 5 years ago and did some usability testing then, so can't we just use the results from that kind of thing?
Yeah, I think it's a bit more fundamental than that, and I think people expect good design now.
Ooh, yeah.
just because of the likes of Apple and many others. I mean, Amazon is another good example. I mean, whether it is particularly good design, but people kind of understand it. It's quite clear. It's, you know, the steps are nice and easy to understand, and you don't have to do a shopping basket experience the same as Amazon. And if you don't, then I think people think, well, this is not good usability, which maybe is a little unfair. Mm. But yeah, I think people expect a good experience now. I think they expect things to be simple to use.
Yeah, which is my third point that I made earlier. Customers have higher expectations.
Really?
So that's really good. Take that whole bit you just said and paste it into number three.
Obviously, you didn't explain that very well.
Ooh.
Or I wasn't listening.
I think you were probably looking a joke. All right, so that is number five. Mobile has changed user behaviour, and user behaviour is always changing, and we need to stay on top of that. I'll tell you another thing people have started doing with their mobile phones that I find interesting in shops. Mm. Especially, I think this started with clothes shopping, especially amongst women, but I think it's now broadened out. Have you ever, I don't know whether your wife has done it, mine hasn't, but I know of others that when Leah used to live with us, she used to do this, which should go into a shop, should try on an outfit, photograph it, and then post it to social media and ask her friends whether she thought it was they thought it was a good thing to buy.
No, she doesn't do that, although what I have witnessed her doing, I don't think she's ever done this, but her friends will show her stuff that's online on their phone when they're together.
Yes.
Like, oh, this dress or that, those shoes or whatever.
Yeah.
So, yes, that does happen.
I think that's a growing thing that more and more people are doing, not just with clothes, but with any decision, really.
Mm-hmm.
Because one of the things that, you know, we want, that I think we as human beings want, is we want peer approval and we want support, especially with a difficult position. So, for example, you know how clients always like to show design around all and sundry before they sign it off?
Yes.
And it's because they're unsure about the decision, and so they want to be backed up by other people.
People will laugh at them. You did what?
Yes, exactly. So you kind of get that kind of recommend, you know, that support and recommendations relating to purchases. So I think customers are, which is my point, you know, sixth point, is customers are relying more heavily on peer-to-peer recommendations.
Yes.
And I think social media is enabling that. But I don't, as you say, I don't think it's just limited to social media. I think people are just kind of showing stuff. Oh, look, you know, I took this photograph, or here's this product I've seen online. What do you think about it? And so that means that we need to pay much more attention to the kind of user experience to enable that kind of thing, and to, you know, and to ensure that that is a good experience when sharing.
Mm. When I was bored in Belfast City Airport on Monday, I was trying on sunglasses and sending photographs of them to Caroline.
Yes.
In the vain hope that she'd say, buy that pair.
Right.
But of course she didn't.
No. Maybe. I try that with cameras. Although Kath did say yes once. That was in an airport, which was a shocker. Still haven't got over that, anyway.
but so you want another one now, don't you? As we mentioned last time.
Yeah. Actually, I'm feeling a bit better about it. Because it looks like the camera on the iPhone 6 is going to be much improved.
Okay.
But it's
still not a proper camera, though, is it?
No, it's not. It's really the zoom function. I mean, I've got a proper camera, which I'm quite happy with. But I want a kind of in-between one that can go in your pocket, but has got an optical zoom.
Yeah, like my Fujifilm one.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a nice thing to have. And I've got a proper camera, but if you take pictures with the proper one, then you go, that's what I really want. But I can't be bothered to carry around a whole bag full of lenses and that kind of thing.
Yeah, so, that's true. Okay, let's move on to number seven. Okay, so number seven is a really simple one, and it's one that everybody should grasp very quickly, which is that outstanding customer service generates repeat business.
Yeah, I think this is the most important point on the list.
Do you really?
Yes.
There we go.
I think this is the difference, if you like. This is what's changed in, or how digital has changed stuff in the last however many years. There's a lot of... stories at the moment. I think there's a company called CD Baby, who basically, if you're a band or an artist or whatever, and you want to get your music printed out as CDs with booklets and all that kind of thing, they provide the service to do that. And basically, they've done super brilliant, and their entire business model, the owner, he puts down to the fact that they have just fallen over themselves on customer service.
Yeah.
And it's just been word of mouth, these guys are brilliant, and it's just snowballed, and they are the ones.
Well, it's a bit like the classic story of Zappos, isn't it? That's yeah. another company that is built around customer service, and you know, they sell shoes for crying out loud. Do you know
yeah.
what I mean?
Yeah.
I remember back in the day where, you know, people would say, oh, you'll never be able to sell shoes online because you want to try them on and all the rest of it. Mm. But, you know, Zappos have just made it so easy, easy to return stuff, etc., that you know, why not?
Mm.
And of course, you were just saying earlier, weren't you, as well, about Amazon. And about how, you know, you always go to Amazon. It's just easy. It's, you know, you get a good service. It's reliable. You know, they deliver quickly. Their return policy is great. So you go with them.
Mm.
You know, so yes, absolutely. Good customer service generates repeat business. I'll tell you the thing, one of the main reasons, I buy from Amazon in a customer service regards, is because they often use a delivery company, not always, which is a bit frustrating, but they often use a delivery company in my area called DPD.
DPD, yeah. Where, oh, you're Steve. You can find out who your driver is and you can get the delivery down to 15 minutes or whatever it is.
Well, it's down to an hour. They give you an hour window, but you can easily text them and say, can you deliver it to my next door neighbour, or can you bring it tomorrow instead? And, you know, it's so flexible and so easy that you don't have to, you know, it's easy for us because we work from home quite a lot of the time, but some people have to take an entire day off of work so that they can be in for a delivery, which is ridiculous, isn't it, really?
Yeah, and it makes you wonder why, therefore, other places, oh, we can't give you a slot between 8 a.m. and 5 p.m.
Yeah, which goes back to this raising higher expectations.
Yeah. So we can't even tell me morning or afternoon, whereas, and the DPD thing does go down to 15 minutes if you're within the hour.
Oh, yes, yeah.
So they can, you know, they'll give you an hour slot, and then you can even I'll think, oh, well, yes, I can, I don't know, go down to the end of the garden and do that thing I was going to do because he's not going to be here for another half an hour.
Yeah, and you can actually look up online and see their GPS position.
Yes.
Which is just awesome.
So, you know, if you're not doing that, or at least something close to that, or then yeah, you're likely to lose custom.
Mm. So this is again, you know, good, higher expectations, but it is the thing of generating repeat business. People come back to you time and time again if you do a good job, and that's always been true to some degree.
Yeah,
you know, even before digital, obviously that was a factor, but I think it's become a bigger factor now because the competition are easily accessible. You know, because you're told about alternatives, and what you were saying about CD Baby isn't just that it's generated repeat business for them, but it's also word of mouth recommendation. It's led to more business for them as well.
Mm, absolutely.
So it's interesting. This providing outstanding customer service to generate repeat business is something that I'm looking at the moment for Headscape.
We don't have to do that, do we?
What's that?
We don't have to do outstanding customer service.
No. Just, you know, keep churning them out, I say. Move on to the next client. It's all plenty more fish in the sea. It's not that we've been working with some clients for years and years and years or anything. No, but I'm always looking for ways to improve that, which is why at the moment I'm creating us a customer journey map. I showed you the beginning of it, didn't I?
Yes.
And the idea is I'm going to map out the whole customer journey and all the different points where a customer interacts with us through their lifestyle. Lifetime. Oh, whatever.
Life cycle,
that's the word. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to look for just little places along each of those kind of touch points where we could just do something little that's nice. You know, just some little thing that shows we give them monkeys. I don't know what those are going to be yet because I haven't got that far. But that's the aim, and the, you know, and it's to generate repeat business. It's like going into a restaurant, isn't it, where You know, they do nice little things that make you feel welcome there. Mm. And when you go back next time, they remember what drink you liked or whatever. It's like Sarah Parmenter, who's opened, we talked about her, didn't we, a couple of weeks ago, who's opened this blush bar. One of the things that they do there is they have a system whereby when you first come to the blush bar and you order your tea and coffee, they mark down what it was that you ordered. So next time you come back in, you can say, oh, is that a milk with two sugars again?
Mm.
You know, just so that, you know, it's those kinds of little customer service elements. And that makes people feel loved and appreciated. And that's what keeps them coming back for more. And it's same is true with our clients. You know, our clients stick with us because we actually show we care about them and that we do. And not even just, not contrived stuff necessarily, but, you know, we just get to like these people and we help them out and we go the extra mile and we build up a friendship, you know, rather than just seeing them as a cash cow. So, yes, outstanding customer service generates repeat business. Next up, number 8, is gathering data on user behavior is cheaper and faster than ever before. There is no excuse anymore, right? So you've got Google Analytics that gives you amazing data on users. Yes. And how, you know, what they're doing and what they want. And you can look at what search terms people have put into the websites. You can see what they're after and what Google terms that they searched. And you can look at where they go on the site and all of that kind of stuff. All of that is free. Then, even usability testing these days is so, so cheap. You can use a service like usertesting.com, which, you know, is costing like $35 per user or something like that. And, you know, getting people in and testing people yourself is massively cheap. You're talking about a 20 quid Amazon voucher, you know, to kind of thank them for their time, and that's about it. So there's no excuse not to kind of look at users and pay attention to them. I haven't got anything else to say on that one, really.
No, that's more. It was more of a statement.
It was more of a telling point. Off.
Yes.
Do it. Okay, so let's look at number 9. So not only is it really cheap to do user testing, it's also cheap to change, right? So, you know, let's take a kind of pre-internet days, yeah. Right? Let's say you were doing an advertising campaign. You know, you have to get that ad campaign right the first time, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Because if you get it wrong, then, you know, you've printed, I don't know, 750,000 billboard ads or whatever, all right? Whatever thing it is you're doing. And that has a big expense attached to it. Right, with digital, you can build something, put it out there, monitor what users do, and then iterate based on that feedback. And actually, that iteration is quite cheap and easy to do. It doesn't need to be complicated. You could do A-B testing on, I don't know, different wording on your homepage, for example, and then quickly and easily change it. So it's not like you can't act on the feedback you've got. It's not a case of going, well, you know, we've got a website now, and, you know, it'd be really expensive to change it. Based on, you know, what we learn about users. So really there's not any point of doing any user testing. That's just bullshit. Because the truth is it's really cheap and easy to change stuff.
It's not cheap and easy to change everything, is it?
No. But, I'm not talking about a rebuild of the site. No, yeah. That wouldn't be cheap and easy. But even that, compared to something like, you know, if you go back to, say, print work, you know, print work is quite expensive. By the time you take into account the designer costs and then the getting the print run done and all of that kind of stuff, that does get reasonably expensive.
Yeah, true.
And, you know, and to change all of that is much more expensive than it is to change stuff on the online, even bigger changes. Yes, obviously, a site redesign is going to be more expensive than, you know, changing a few bits of text. But it's amazing how much you can do. It's like one of our clients at the moment, our client out in Chicago that we've got, you know, that they will need to do a major redesign on their site. But actually, you could do quite a lot, just short-term little things on their website to make it better. For example, one of the things that's terrible on their site is the legibility. And that's simply because the typeface is too small and it's a serif typeface. Now, to change that universally across the site is just a CSS update. So that actually could be quite cheap and easy to do, you know, and yet have a profound impact on the user experience.
True.
So adapting and iterating digital is cheap, and there's no excuse for not doing it. Right, that brings us on to our final point. Our final point there, Marcus, is that it's proven to work. Which goes back to really what you were saying about CD babies. I was going to say CBBs.
The CBBs.
Which is a children's TV channel in Britain.
Yeah.
Very good. Well, it's not actually. It used to drive me crazy. But on the other hand, it did shut my child up. So it
didn't exist when my children were little.
Aww.
There you go.
Well, that's because you're so old. Oh, you had children really young. One or the other.
Bit of both,
yes. Yeah, so the last point is it works, right? All this stuff, you know, providing an outstanding customer service works. It will generate more business. It will improve customer satisfaction. It will generate repeat business. And, you know, CD Babies is an example of that, as is Zappos, as is Amazon. You know, all of these companies, and even companies that were really struggling. Dell are a great example of that. You know, Dell had a horrendous reputation in customer service, and it was impacting their bottom line. And they've addressed that, and you know what? They're more profitable than they were. You know, so outstanding customer service, folk being user-centric, just works. It's proven to work. It makes a difference. And ultimately, it can be a cost saving as well. I mean, you look at gov.uk and what they've done. You know, by providing an outstanding customer service online, they've reduced the number of calls they get to their call centre by about a third, I believe. I might be wrong in that, but that's the figure that for some reason is knocking around in my head. And when every call was costing them, I think, something like £6 per call, suddenly things are a lot cheaper. So it not only generates more business, it saves you money, and it's just the right thing to do.
So, absolutely. Couldn't agree more.
So there you go. That is our 10 reasons for being more obsessed about your users and looking after them. That is all I wanted to cover this week. Marcus.
Yes. I've gone back to the 10 best jokes from the Edinburgh Festival. This is one. This was number two, actually.
Okay.
From a guy called Masai Graham.
Mm-hmm.
I've written a joke about a fat badger, but I couldn't fit it into my set.
That's like cracker joke kind of stuff, isn't it?
But that's my favourite type of joke.
And yet it's considered the second best joke in the
maybe
Amazon Fringe.
His delivery was, I don't think there's any maybe about it. I expect his delivery was somewhat better than mine.
Could well have been. We need to see if we can find a video online of that.
Yeah.
That's what ought to be our new thing, right? That you ought to deliver it, then we should find the audio of a proper comedian delivering it and play that.
That would be a good idea, but that means more work for me, Paul.
Your level of commitment is disturbing. But there you go. That's this week's show. So next week we will return with yet another. I'm seeing someone behind your back this week, Marcus.
What?
I'm going on another podcast.
What?
I'm going on Unfinished Business with Andy Clark.
Oh, I've done that one.
Oh, he's seen you too. Actually, I knew that. So I'm doing that, which is cool. And also, I'm going on a podcast called The Web Ahead, which is with Jen, who I met when I was in at the Blend conference in Chicago.
In Charlotte.
Charlotte.
You are very properly jet-lagged.
I am seriously jet-lagged. I've got to do a big presentation this afternoon, Marcus. That's going to be fun.
In 2 hours' time.
Oh, don't tell me that. That's really depressing. Yes, I'll be fine.
Yes.
Think some Red
then
Bull.
You can collapse afterwards.
Some Red Bull will be in order. So, yeah, there we go. So, lots of podcasting going on. But join us next week for a new show. I was going to say something exciting, but I can't think of anything. So, there we go. Talk to you again next week.
Bye.